6:17 a.m. It is a delight to welcome to our microphones our good friend, retired attorney, now resident of Tennessee, Mark Pulliam. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning to you, Michael.
Well, you wrote an article we want to talk about. You call it, the title, the headline is Elite Lawyers Wage War on America's Cities. This is at your Misrule of Law blog, a chronicle of legal and judicial mischief. This could be like 100,000 pages easily if you're chronicling legal and judicial mischief. Now, the other little thing I would add is you could do probably 100 stories about elite lawyers waging war on America, period, in various arenas. Tell us about your argument here, Mark Pulliam.
Well, the first thing I want to say is people in Tennessee should be very thankful that we are located in the Sixth Circuit instead of the Ninth Circuit. So Tennessee, along with Ohio, Kentucky, and Michigan, are in a different judicial circuit than California and the Western states, which are in the Ninth Circuit. And so my article, which was in the American Conservative originally, focused on a case that my old law firm, Latham & Watkins, had undertaken as a pro bono project, which means for the public good. And it basically involved partnering with a legal aid group in Boise to sue the city of Boise, Idaho, because Boise had laws on the books that prohibited people, vagrants, bums, homeless people, from sleeping in the public parks. And they filed this lawsuit. It took 10 years before they finally prevailed. The city of Boise initially won. Anyway, they took it up to the Ninth Circuit, where a crazy panel of three judges determined that the law was unconstitutional because it violated the Eighth Amendment prescription on cruel and unusual punishment, because homeless people don't have any control over where they live. It's a status, not a conduct. And this ruling, because the Supreme Court declined to hear the case, now affects 1,600 cities in the western United States that are within the purview of the Ninth Circuit. So when you see on TV pictures, images of San Francisco and Seattle and Portland and other cities in the Ninth Circuit and Los Angeles, and you wonder, why are all those tent cities there? Why are all these people camping in public areas in these squalid drug dens? It's because the Ninth Circuit has said that the cities within that jurisdiction of the Ninth Circuit cannot prohibit it. And so if you can't prohibit it, it basically becomes unregulated and becomes out of control.
Mark Pulliam, let me ask you this question, very important question. Why did the Supreme Court choose not to take this case up?
Well, first of all, there's many, many cases kicking around in the United States each year, and the Supreme Court only decides a relative handful of them. And so a case could be very meritorious and still not get the attention of the Supreme Court. The other answer, and this is, I spoke yesterday with somebody who lives in Boise and teaches at Boise State, and he said that the real reason is the voters in Boise elected a Soros-funded person as mayor, and the mayor signaled in the legal pleadings filed with the Supreme Court that the city no longer intended to enforce the ordinance anyway, so the case became moot. I don't know that for a fact, but that's what a professor in Boise is telling me, and it sounds like a plausible explanation.
So are you telling me that George Soros got a progressive elected mayor of Boise, Idaho?
It happens. It can happen anywhere, and cities are most vulnerable. Boise is sort of the bright blue city in an otherwise red state, But unfortunately, because the rest of the state is very lightly populated, Boise is the tail that wags the dog.
Wow, that's kind of crazy. Of course, this is another reason why people are leaving California and coming to Nashville, Tennessee, and East Tennessee.
And exactly. And so just because, so in the Sixth Circuit and the rest of the country other than the Ninth Circuit, states and cities can still regulate the public areas, which if you want to avoid chaos, you have to regulate public areas. If you have aggressive panhandling, if people are able to urinate and defecate in public, sleep anywhere they want, quickly the downtown areas become blighted. And in Tennessee, our legislature has reaffirmed the ability of jurisdictions to regulate camping, so-called camping, in public areas. So, you know, so not only are people fleeing the Ninth Circuit because they've created a disaster, but Tennessee is actually in the opposite direction. We are willing to enforce these longstanding rules. It used to be that you couldn't do a lot of things in public. You couldn't be drunk in public. You couldn't loiter. You couldn't panhandle, et cetera. And as those things deteriorate, the conditions decline. But so far, that's not true in Tennessee. And I think ultimately a case like this will go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will disagree with the idea that there is a constitutional right to live in a squalid drug den in the middle of downtown.
What is it about left-wing lawyers who subvert the law by going to amendments of the Constitution and discovering rights and privileges that no one else saw until they went and created them? Like, you know, I don't know, the 14th Amendment often is used as the place where they where these rights and unknown rights just spring up spontaneously.
Well, I think lawyers are one of the leading sort of elite groups, and elite groups like to make rules that suit them and circumvent democracy if they can, and that's what our judicial system has become. The bigger question is why fancy law firms, and these are global behemoths where the partners make a ton of money. They employ thousands of lawyers worldwide. Why they would want to undertake a project like this that is so contrary, obviously contrary to the best wishes, best interests of cities like Boise. And my explanation, as I put in my article in the American Conservative, which is reprinted on my blog, is that the kids graduating from law schools today are a bunch of left-wing social justice warriors that wish that they were working full-time these kinds of projects, but have to console themselves by doing a little bit of pro bono on the side while they do corporate drudgery most of the time. So it's sort of...
I've noticed the same problem. Our law schools are basically, you know, filled with left-wing professors and left-wing kids who want to subvert the American Constitutional Republic and our concept of ordered law, of ordered liberty, rather, and replace it with one of these kind of top-down utopian worlds, and it's an utter disaster. Do you see that in terms of upcoming law students? What percentage of law students now would you say are left-wing authoritarians?
1 minute.
I think the problem is worse at the top-tier elite, you know, Ivy League schools, but it's largely a function of what higher education has become. The kids graduating from college, regardless of what major you're in and regardless of what part of the country, colleges have taken on this cast of being indoctrination centers. And so, sadly, I would say overall, you know, at least three-quarters of the law students have this very leftist orientation. And in some schools, it's much higher than that. The Federalist Society was formed to basically capture the minority and give them a voice. I will say this, at the University of Tennessee, we are probably one of the least woke law schools in America and one of the leading voices in conservative circles is Glenn Reynolds, the Instapundit, who teaches law at the University of Tennessee. So I'd say...
Well, that's a happy note and another reason for people to move to Tennessee. Mark Pulliam, thanks so much for that great report.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. When we come back, the original All-Star panelist, Crom Carmichael, will be with us. This is the Tennessee Star Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.